You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Our phone number is 564-1290 or 866-564-1290. Go to RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com, to listen to past programs and find real estate information. Call me after the program at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. Welcome back. If you've just tuned in, you're 30 minutes late. We start the program at 6 minutes after the hour, but thanks for joining us. Talking with Robert Brugman, who is a university professor, Illinois, Chicago, author of the book Sprawl, A Compact History. Sprawl, A Compact History. So I wanted to ask you, we started the program talking about L.A. We segued into Santa Barbara during the second segment. L.A., you know, we discussed earlier and the density of it and how it's increased. But
right.
the freeways, you know, part of your article, you mentioned that they actually did a great job in the 40s and 50s, but, or I guess the 50s and 60s, whatever it was, but they didn't keep up with the demand. And so talk a little bit about what a good job they did and why didn't they, you know, could they have kept up with the demand if they had to go back in time? What could they have done to perhaps avoid some of the problems that they have now?
Well, I think one of the things to remember is that L.A. had terrible transportation problems in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. Almost anybody who is old enough to have driven back in those years knows what an incredibly long, arduous trip it could be just driving from, let's say, Los Angeles to Santa Monica. It could take forever. When those roads went through, and not just in L.A., but all over the country, they were a revelation. They allowed you to go at 60 miles a minute during most times of the day and night when they were finished at first.
Maybe they went a mile a minute?
Yeah, a mile a minute, sorry. And so in Los Angeles, I remember even during the first trips that I took there in the late 60s, the 70s, I remember very distinctly this liberation that came with the idea that you could be in Santa Monica and accept a dinner invitation in Pasadena and expect to drive right across the metropolitan area and get there in time. What's happened since then is that system, which really did, Los Angeles really did build its way out of congestion. What's happened since then is that the population has increased dramatically. The lanes of freeway have not kept pace, so that in the 1960s, for example, L.A. had one of the largest collections of freeway, the highest numbers of lane miles per capita in the country. By now, L.A. is down in the bottom quarter of all American cities in terms of lane miles per capita. So I think absolutely if they had spent some more money and kept the freeway system going as they were expanding outward, that some of these really terrible commutes, for example, between Orange County and the Inland Empire, could have been much alleviated. And I think that as they were doing that, there was probably would have been no reason they couldn't have put in, let's say, on that particular corridor, some bus lanes or light rail or something else. But we got neither the roads nor the public transit that we needed there.
Yeah, right. When they had all these freeway systems, a rail down the center of the freeways, if they had planned that from the beginning, instead of these carpool lanes or this and that, I mean, having a rail down the middle, it would be tremendous.
Well, and of course, the LA has gone back in and started to put rail down the medians of some of those freeways, but at tremendous retrofit costs.
Man. Now, let me ask you this. So they built this great system back in the 60s, and it was great, and they had this great ratio of lane miles per capita. But does this give fuel to the argument of build it and they will come? Does this strengthen the argument of people who say, don't add a third lane in Santa Barbara because it won't alleviate the traffic? It will invite traffic.
Well, there is a certain amount of that, but I don't think that any freeway ever really creates traffic. I think that there's not a single person I know who says, oh, there's a new freeway, I'm going to go out and drive on it for no good reason. People do it because there's latent demand. But let's examine this a little bit more, because let's talk about the flip side of it. If the people are correct and that building new highways induces traffic, then the idea that somehow we could get around this problem by building rail is completely fallacious, too, because if you could, get number of cars off the road because people are going to use rail, what would happen? Well, by the logic of induced traffic, you would have all those people right back on the road again.
Because so, you would alleviate the traffic problem by building the rail. And
right.
So you're saying you open up the traffic lanes not by adding the traffic, but by reducing the traffic.
Right. And then if induced traffic, if that theory is correct, and we can talk about how much induced traffic there probably is, but if it's true that it simply fills up with traffic again, which is the whole argument that the anti-highway people have used, then it doesn't help to build rail either.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Latent demand, define that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Well, latent demand is the technical term that the highway engineers and transportation planners now use. That means when you do open any given highway, what's the likelihood of what percentage of the traffic is going to be new traffic that wouldn't be traveling that way if you didn't have the highway? And there's a tremendous statistical battles about this question. But in any case, that it is clear that when you, let's say, provide room for 100 more cars, that it doesn't immediately fill up with 100 more cars. It fills up with some considerable lesser number, and it's almost always people that come off the surface roads. So you're increasing then the capacity on the surface roads. When it does fill up, it just means that overall there's lots and lots of demand. And one of the things that you can do if you want to just prove that this idea of build it and they will come doesn't work is go to a lot of the economically depressed cities around the country which have built these huge freeway systems hoping that it's going to jumpstart their economy, and it never does. It doesn't because that demand is built by people who need to go places because of work and jobs and all sorts of things that keep the economy going, and when that isn't happening, those roads stay deserted.
Well, how familiar are you with our situation with this third lane controversy?
Oh, don't know very much about that.
How familiar are you with basically the 101 versus Highway 5 and, you know, commuting and truckers? Because one of the arguments, well, you'll be able to answer, depending on whether or not you can answer this, that'll tell me if you're familiar with it. But one of the arguments I heard against adding the third lane is they feel that it will work, and that a lot of these truckers that might be avoiding the gridlock on Santa Barbara taking this route who currently use 5, which is, you know, not just right next door, it's a bit
right.
of a route, you know, then they might say, well, let's use the 101 because now we could sail through Santa Barbara, so they're afraid that now these truckers will be there. I mean, basically, we have a freeway that's two lanes for the most part, but it opens up to three lanes, and we have this bottleneck, and people want to extend the third lane from the top of Santa Barbara near Goleta all the way down to the Ventura line. And
right.
to eliminate this, and it almost happened in the early 90s, and there was a huge push against it, and Caltrans, they had the money and everything, and I know some of the leaders, at least one specific leader, was on the front page of the paper saying, you know, I blew it. We should have done it in the 90s.
One of the problems with the position of Santa Barbara is that it's right on the ocean, and so this is the most desirable, the most contested land there is in America. And I think that I've driven both of these, 5 and the 101, for years and years and years between L.A. and San Francisco, and there have always been all these bottlenecks on the 101, and particularly that bottleneck near Santa Barbara, which even in the best of times, the traffic will back up. I'm not sure that just expanding that ad nauseum is the way to go in that particular case. One of the biggest problems that you point out is this truck traffic. This is a nationwide problem. And you may know that there's a scheme underway to create a national trunk road for trucks. And I think that in the end, something like this probably has to happen. That no, when those highways were built, there was never any notion that you would have such a tremendous amount of trucking, particularly in a place like Southern California. So I don't know exactly what ought to be done on the 101 in Santa Barbara, but I do know that trucks on highways, and we're talking about the 5 as well as the 101, is a huge problem. They're not really very compatible with cars, and something probably has to give here.
Robert Brugman, author of Sprawl, A Compact History, just a great article I read in the paper, and so gracious of you to join us here in Santa Barbara on Radio Real Estate, Robert.
It was my pleasure.
I don't know about this truck lane. I'd love to have you back sometime to talk about the guy who built the highway network in Manhattan, Moses. I grew up in Manhattan driving those highways. And so maybe we can do that again sometime.
Happy to do it.
God, I was going to say one other thing, something you said, but you did a great job. I really appreciate you joining us. Robert Brugman, Sprawl, A Compact History is the book. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com, RadioRealEstate.com. We'll come back for the fourth and final segment to discuss weekly sales and MLS listings. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.